Good afternoon. When I saw what panel my project was assigned to, I thought, oh, this will be interesting. It's not all about community benefit, which is the topic I'm going to talk to you about this afternoon. I'll get to learn about all these other advocacy efforts that are underway, and it'll be terrific, not only to be a speaker, but to feel like a participant in this session. So I want to say how much I truly, really appreciated all the presentations, and then I just have to say that last one, I'm completely verklempt. I just feel like the integrity, the science, the perseverance, and the cleverness with which you thought about advancing a public health outcome is just extraordinary. I am not surprised you are both heroes. I mean, I think I feel so gifted to be here this afternoon to have an opportunity to hear about your work and to see what an extraordinary job everyone has done, but that was a very particularly compelling presentation and strategy and initiative that's really going to make the difference in many, many young people's lives in the face of some really just difficult circumstances. So thank you so much for your work, but also for being here this afternoon. As the introduction says, I'm the lead research scientist at the Milken Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University, and I have no conflict of interest relationships to disclose. Like many of you and thousands of the people at the meeting here this year, some of my colleagues and I at George Washington University for a long time have been trying to integrate sound public health practices and principles into the healthcare delivery system. With the advent of the Affordable Care Act, we now spend a lot of time thinking about integrating public health principles and practices into a new health system. So we fundamentally believe the goal and the direction that we're moving in is to be thinking about a system that has at its heart and soul wellness and prevention, and to be thinking about what are the various ways, not just one big appropriation, but what are the various ways in which all of the focus on prevention in terms of early screening, no copays for some services, and the other kinds of activities that we want people to engage in when they focus around prevention and wellness, what are the very many ways we're going to think about where those resources come from and who are the different players that we're going to need to rely on to make that happen? So we are particularly interested in a provision in the Affordable Care Act that looks at increasing the accountability and transparency of the contribution that tax-exempt hospitals must make in their community in exchange for that tax-exempt status. So some of you may know community benefit has been a concept and a practice and an obligation for decades. It's traditionally considered an IRS compliance issue because it has everything to do with tax-exempt status. In order for those nonprofit hospitals to be tax-exempt, pay no taxes, there is an expectation on the part of the government that there will be a contribution to the community that benefits and improves community health. It's been around for a very long time. In late 1969, it traditionally had been charity care, come to the emergency room, you have no means of paying, the hospital absorbs that cost, that is a contribution to the community and clearly recognized by the IRS as such. In 1969, the categories were expanded. So there are a variety of things that a hospital can report to the IRS on annually as meeting its community benefit obligation. In 2009, many years later, after 1969, the IRS introduced a form that every nonprofit hospital has to fill out when it files its annual report to the IRS. So most of you know if it's a nonprofit organization, you file a 990 form with the IRS. Tax-exempt hospitals attach a worksheet to that 990 form called Schedule H, and they report to the IRS about the various categories. They report to the IRS on the categories that they're spending their community benefit dollars in. And what I want to focus on today is mostly Part 1 and 2, financial assistance and other activities and community building activities. Just so you can see, this is what this complicated, not so easy to read form looks like, but the hospitals fill it in every year. The categories that are allowable by the IRS, financial assistance at cost means charity care, essentially, of how we used to talk about it in the past. Medicaid, the difference between what the services actually cost and what you're reimbursed under your Medicaid. Cost of other means tested government programs, et cetera, research, health professions, education. But then take a look at community health improvement services. that category, community health improvement services, for all intents and purposes, is the place in which a hospital reports its expenditures, its community benefit expenditures, outside the four walls of the hospital. You're doing something with the schools. You're doing something with the community health center. You may be working on a variety of other programs. I'll show you where housing will come in. But it's in that community health improvement services line that you get a sense of how the hospital may be spending some of its community benefit dollars outside the hospital. There's a part two on this Schedule H called community building activities, and you can see those are the activities that don't have the word medical or health in them. For all intents and purposes, significantly upstream public health interventions. Think about actually getting to the source or the root of the problem as opposed to dealing with the symptoms. So are there some strategies we could engage in that deal with some of the challenges around asthma by dealing with housing? Are there some other issues around environmental improvements, economic development? These are listed separately on the Schedule H form and until recently not necessarily counted toward a hospital's community benefit obligation. So there was a disincentive for hospitals to be really investing in some of these upstream activities in terms of their IRS compliance reality. The IRS has recently said if you point to an evidence base, in fact, you can count investments in these kinds of activities as your community benefit obligation. And there are many of us who are beginning to talk about safe harbors, pointing to already existing studies that suggest that there's a lot of evidence to look at why those investments, in fact, might be the best bang for your buck when you're trying to think about addressing community needs. Some colleagues at the Northeastern University published a study in 2013 on the 2009 reporting of the nonprofit hospitals, and 7.5% of total expenses went to community benefit if you looked at all those expenditures across the board. About 6.4% of those were going to the inside the four walls of the hospital categories, and less than 0.5% were going into that community health improvement line that I pointed out a little bit earlier. So our interest is really in trying to work collaboratively and effectively with hospitals to say, if you are going to make these contributions anyway, which you have to under the IRS requirements, could we begin to think about some reallocation of those resources? Not as much going into, depends on your circumstances in your community, but can we begin to be thinking about moving that needle a little bit further beyond less than 0.5%? Of course, there are some wonderful leaders who are spending a fair amount of money in that category, and then there are some folks who aren't doing it at all. In the new provisions in the Affordable Care Act, these nonprofit hospitals now have to conduct a community health needs assessment every 3 years, and they have to adopt an implementation strategy. So the community health needs assessment is a process, and it's very prescribed. Even the law, the Affordable Care Act, is pretty clear. Have to consult with people with public health expertise, have to have community people at the table, and you have to make it publicly widely available so that if you'll go to any of these hospital websites and you have to see the community health needs assessment that was conducted. In order to be in compliance, the implementation strategy, what will you, Hospital A, do in response to these community health needs assessments, that has to be adopted by the board of directors of the hospital now. So at least the issue of community benefit obligation and how those dollars are being spent are being considered by the people at the top who have the most fiduciary responsibility and stewardship for that particular hospital. So my colleague and I at George Washington University said, okay, that's two legs of a three-legged stool. What are the needs in the community? How are you thinking about what you might do in response to that in partnership and collaboration, clearly, with other folks in the community? But at the end of the day, how'd you spend your money? Does the money actually follow the need and what it is that people are talking about as being those strategies? And that became incredibly difficult to find. It's buried in that, it's on the Schedule H form, buried in the 990 form. You have to go through GuideStar to get it. Not so easy. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has funded us to literally create a user-friendly web tool that anyone, all of us in this room, but anybody else who would be interested in knowing how did a hospital report on its community benefit spending in a given year, so that when you go to talk to a community-based organization in particular, goes to talk to a hospital about the use of the community benefit dollars, there's an opportunity to say, gee, I see you're spending a lot in that financial assistance at cost and the Medicaid piece. Can we also talk a little bit about whether or not you could be increasing the allocation into that community health improvement or the community building space? Could we be using some of those dollars to invest in the upstream strategies that will get the best return on investment, and the return being the best health outcomes for folks in the community. So this tool will give people access, it'll inform, it will also allow comparisons so that you can compare how one hospital is allocating its community benefit dollars to another. We give you categories so that you can at least hopefully do as close a comparison in terms of demographic surroundings, challenges to the hospital, is it a teaching hospital, is it rural, is it urban, so that you're beginning to at least make some comparisons that have some validity to them, but you can actually compare to other hospitals in a way that would be very difficult for anyone to do right now. We have a bunch of advisors who've been working with us on this project. I'll just look up there. Northeastern University, the folks who did the journal article that reported on the actual spending in 2009, they're the folks getting us the data for the tool. RTI International is designing the web tool. And then Community Catalyst, and Michelle, my colleague, will pick up in just a second, they're working closely with us to think about how we're going to work with some test site communities to test the tool. It's a prototype, so it only has data for 9 states. We're trying to see if we can get the IRS data, put it into a tool, and actually make this accessible and understandable to the average person. My colleague and I always say, like, us, to try to sort of better understand it. So the prototype is in place right now for, we've got data for 9 states. It gets the 2010 and 2011 information, and I'll let Michelle talk a little bit about how we're going to be engaging with some communities for them to test the tool. I keep trying to say so clearly, this is not us sending it out to some communities to say, how do we do and could you evaluate it? We're really sending it out to the communities to act in partnership with us to say, we've built this tool we call a car. It has 4 wheels on it. Should it have 5? You know, did we get the windshield wipers right? I mean, there's a real usability piece that we want to have here. The data has to be accurate. The terms have to be correct. But we're trying to think about how to describe it in a way that the average community-based person who doesn't have the time or the resources to actually access this information usually would be able to do that. So we see lots of opportunities for actually improving community health through the use of community benefit dollars, but we also need to be giving people tools to better engage with those hospitals and have a conversation that can result in that kind of partnership and ultimately in dollars spent to improve the health of a community. So let me just turn it over to Michelle.
So my name is Michelle Craig. I do work with Community Catalyst with the Hospital Accountability Project. We're located in Boston, and I wanted to give you a little bit more background on why we wanted to participate in this project, and no relationships disclosed. But a little bit about Community Catalyst that sort of lets you know why we wanted to participate in this. So really our goal as a national organization is that we really want to advocate for high-quality, affordable health care. And part of that is looking at the healthcare systems, right, and what they're doing. But we do that through collaborating with national partners as well as universities and other states and advocates around the country who are looking at this work and asking questions of it. So we have networks in 40-plus states at this point. So we're really engaged with a bunch of stakeholders who are asking these questions, and we're helping them think about issue campaigns. So specifically, we've been working on outreach and enrollment under the ACA, but we also work with the project that I work with, Hospital Accountability Project, where we really look at some of the financial assistance policies, medical billing and debt, billing and collections, as well as community benefit. So we've been at the table pretty much since the beginning, working with some of our federal partners to really think about, you know, what really needs to be part of the ACA in dealing with hospital accountability. So, as Maureen mentioned, we're testing this prototype, and we're testing it with some partners who are out in the communities in these areas. So there's 8 test sites, and they range from the East Coast to the West Coast. We really wanted to kind of get a broad range of states invested in testing this as partners. So Vermont, we're working with an organization, an issue-based organization in New York, in the Bronx and Brooklyn area, as well as Metro DC and Atlanta, Georgia are some advocates we're also working with who are working on some policy issues. Detroit, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that's an advocacy organization as well, but also some issue-based partners. Denver, Colorado, and the Portland, Oregon area. So we really have some great areas who are sort of looking at these questions of what are hospitals reporting on the Schedule H tool. So these advocates and issue-based organizations are now familiar with the community health needs assessment process, which, you know, just happened in 2012, 2013. They're starting to look at the implementation plans, but they're all asking that question of, great, those are really great, but what are hospitals really spending? And so we knew that working with GW and the other partners on this project would be really important information for our partners who are asking us the questions through technical assistance. But also we wanted to participate because this is complicated information. Financial information in general, looking at any kind of IRS form, is complicated. You know, what could you do with that information if you had it? So while the prototype is a prototype right now, there are some steps that we're going to go through to think about what might you do with this information and what might you not be able to do with the information. So this gives you a sense of our testing process. So we've been working very hard with some of our national advisory group partners who have looked at the prototype tool. They've given us a lot of great feedback with the how it functions and what it contains and how it's displayed. Now we're getting ready to take it out to those 8 test sites, and we're going to be sort of doing a process with them that's sort of targeted, but asking them to think about functionality of the tool because, it contains information that's a little dated at this point, 2010, 2011. That's the most recent data that we could get. But it gives them a good sense of what could this tool look like, what could be in this tool that we might be able to use. So they're going to take a look at that by hopefully the early December, late November, and then by mid-December we're going to get feedback from those 8 sites. So through a testing process, asking them to go through some steps and look at the hospitals they're really interested in and comparing those, they're going to give us some feedback about that prototype tool, which we're calling 1.0, thinking that there probably is going to be a 2.0, there might be a 3.0. We're going to learn a lot from this. So while the tool will not be made public, through this process of getting information from these 8 sites who are able to then compare, it gives us a good sense of how people might use this. But part of our other role with this project is also to think about, with these advocates, what are some things that you need if you had this information? What would you do with it? How would you need to share it with others? So as you can imagine, you know, having seen the slide of what actually the tool looks like, the Schedule H form actually looks like, you can imagine there's a lot of information there. And so we've tried to organize it in a way that helps them think about the different categories that are reported on it, but then how might you take that information out to your community? How might you use it in some of your issue campaigns? So trying to give them some template PowerPoints that they might use moving forward. We're pretty sure that we're going to need a user guide for the prototype and the tool when it eventually goes out because it's information that not everybody might be familiar with looking at and understanding. And for sure, there's going to be some other resources and tools that we're going to need to think about. Because while people may be familiar with the needs assessment process and the implementation strategies, they may not necessarily be familiar with how the hospitals are reporting and what they can do with that information. So I'm going to wrap it up. I think we did okay.
You did.
So we have a couple of minutes left for questions. Yes. Can you come up to the microphone for the benefit of the recording? So the question for the benefit of the recording is this tool seems like it would be a great way for communities to approach hospitals in asking for community benefit dollars.
We are hopeful and know from the folks that we've listened to carefully that there are probably a wide variety of audiences who will find this information helpful. We specifically wanted to design it for community-based individuals, so that as you either are beginning to participate in these community health needs assessments process or have had historically a relationship with the hospital, there's an opportunity for you to go to the hospital with information and ideas in a way that may have been difficult before. So that Michelle mentioned, you know, we're working on a user guide. We have tried very hard to make this tool be the kind of thing where you really almost don't have to have a user guide, that we're trying to make it so accessible that, in fact, it's definitely not designed for a researcher, although we think some of the data that's here could be helpful to folks who want to look at that. But we don't want it to be intimidating, and we're trying very hard for it to be accessible once, to Michelle's point, once you have a sense that, oh, that might be a really helpful piece of information for me to have in that conversation I'm going to have with the hospital. So we talk with folks all the time about encouraging many people at the community-based level to be proactive with the hospital, to go and talk about these kinds of partnerships and encourage the expenditures in community health improvement. We suspect that, and we hope that it'll also be helpful to the hospitals for a variety of reasons, the comparison piece, some other things that are a little difficult for folks to get access to. But I appreciate the question because we'll see how well we do in the test sites. I think we're going to get some tough love feedback, but that's okay. But it's actually designed for community-based people to be empowered with information that informs those conversations.
Yeah, and just as a follow-up, because I think where there's confusion is you had said it was not publicly available. And so the point is it's not publicly available during the pilot. And once you feel comfortable, the 2.0 version, whatever version, that will be publicly available.
All 50 states publicly available to anyone. Thanks for that clarification. Yeah, it was just in this prototype.
So again, in the short time we had, we didn't go through all of the detail. Oh, sure. The question is, are hospitals asking to see what information is being put into the tool that is then going to be disseminated widely to anyone who would want to use the tool and get access? I just want to preface by saying, I'll go to the point. All of the information in the tool comes off the form that the hospitals report. And so first it's publicly available information because it's reported to the IRS. It's just difficult to access. The information comes right off the form, so we don't do any manipulations with the data. We do present that information almost like in bite-sized pieces, so that here's the information about those 9 categories. This is how the hospital, and it's in percentages. What percentage do you spend in this category of your operating expenses? What percentage on the others? So the way we're presenting it was to try to make it manageable for people to sort of take in a lot of information. Our advisory group has included folks from the hospital community, and we've gotten some very constructive feedback from them. I annually now go to the Association Community Health Improvement meeting, an annual meeting of the folks who work in most of the hospitals and do a lot of the community benefit work on behalf of the hospitals, and we've been talking about this tool. So we've tried very hard within the development phase to think and listen carefully to the hospitals in terms of how this will be presented. And then there will be some hospitals in the test site communities who test it for us. The former.
Other questions? I have a question for Jill, actually. In your presentation, you talked about setting targets, policy targets, and if the appropriation dropped below a certain level, you determined it was no longer useful to go after that policy. I would love to hear about how organizationally you determine what is a big enough target.
It's a great question. It's not even just organizationally. It's a lot with our partners because, a point of the process is to be able to come to consensus as partners in terms of those minimums. It kind of depends on the provision. Often it's evidence-based. There's something in the evidence that indicates, like a good example is on, we work on sugar sweetened beverage taxes.
there's a certain threshold that we need the tax amount to be to have the impact in terms of the population to economically make the price of the product enough that it will disincentivize the purchase of that. So sometimes there's something in the evidence that indicates to get the effect that we want, we need some level of policy in terms of the intervention. That said, there have been a number of areas that we didn't know, and we had to guess. You know, a good example is the 35% of floor space for healthy food. That had never been attempted before. So one of the more interesting parts of the project, I think, for this group could be, through this process, we've identified a lot of policy research gaps. And so we've turned every one of those gaps into research questions, and we're actually out right now looking for funders to fund that work. In fact, Robert Wood Johnson stepped up with another $600,000 that they're funding through Healthy Eating Research now to begin to answer some of those questions where we kind of guessed. We gave it our best guess with the experts, you know, kind of expert-informed in terms of that policy. And now we'll have to actually, once we pass the policy, hopefully evaluate it and begin to answer some of those research questions. And then finally, I'll just say, like I said, it's a group exercise. It takes us a long time to get through that process because of how many organizations we consult with that are part of that process. Ultimately, goes to that strategic advisory committee that I named earlier for their consensus in terms of what we establish as partners we want to have. Yeah, so the question is around the regional meetings and how we're helping to bring people together to be part of a broader movement. Those are usually very regionally based. So we have some general skill building, perhaps, that go in, but every region, sometimes there are differences in terms of what the regional need is, whether it's around the issues that they want to build on. Like I said, we have a particular focus on healthy food financing in the South. So a lot of that regional meeting, quite frankly, is a lot around the movement of the healthy food financing and food access work that's happening in the South. There'll be some skill building in terms of coalitions, health equity, you know, things that we've seen in terms of generally across that work, that there may be particular skills that we've found that we need to build in the advocates that are on the ground. And then I think the other part that adds value is, again, up to this point, those advocates haven't necessarily. There have been a few regional meetings. There's something called the Southern Obesity Summit. There have been a few convenings that have been able to convene partners. But there's a number of other parts of the country that have never been convened before, where the advocates, you know, you may have advocates in California doing good work, but they're not necessarily connected to the good folks in Montana, that kind of work. So I think with the regional, we did seven of them in the first year to really, again, bring, you know, even more a smaller set of partners. We're doing the four where we're expanding, where they get a sense of a broader set of work that's happening across the nation. And again, a lot of it's just making those connections with what's currently going on in the environment. And last thing I'll say is a good example is when I first went to Michigan, they have this annual meeting called Healthy Kids, Healthy Michigan. They have a great coalition there. I did the first meeting I did there. They actually essentially came up to me after and said, there's really nothing that you're doing and Voices for Healthy Kids that we want to do. And then they came to our regional meeting, and they got to hear a lot about the healthy food financing work, and we're now funding a pretty major initiative in Michigan with a particular focus on Detroit and the rebuilding of Detroit, and how we can make sure that healthy food and access to physical activity and other things is incorporated in that planning in Detroit. And I don't think they would have thought about that as an opportunity if they wouldn't have been connected to others in the region and the nation and learned about how it was really possible for them to utilize these resources to run a campaign in Michigan. Thank you.
I'm going to take moderator's privilege and ask the last question of our Canadian heroes. I'm wondering, as you reflect on your, Juliet and Ian, as you reflect on the work that you presented, what would you do differently if you had to do it over again?
In June of 2011, I asked Dr. Mitchell, who is very well known in pediatrics in Calgary, an obstetrician gynecologist and a surgical oncologist, to go in to speak to the Calgary Catholic School Board. And the Calgary Catholic School Board gave them two options. They said, you can come and have 1 hour with us in private, or you can have 20 minutes during a regularly scheduled meeting in public. And it would be interesting to hear your views, the views of the audience on this. But I, coming from law, I said opt for the open public meeting. But the three physicians are used to having private conversations with people, and they move them. They move them from, you know, a terrible diagnosis to thinking about palliative care, for example. So I think all three thought, that will be great. We can talk to them, we can reason with them, and we will move them. I thought, if you bring the public into it right from the beginning, the public will see how embarrassing this is and will move it faster. So that was, I wish I had prevailed, but I don't know what you knew.
I have to defend myself.
I didn't mean it like that.
I'm not sure it was as clear-cut as you said. One of the question the audience didn't ask was, where was public health? And that's not the question you asked. Where was public health? I'll tell you where it was. It was hiding, and it was opposing. It was not with us. Sorry.
I mean, sadly, that's true. And in fact, our public health officer, when we had a media event to get the letter, which you saw part of, out of the envelope, the media then went to the public health officer, put the microphone in his face and said, do you think that letter should be out of the envelope? And he said, people shouldn't always do what the doctor says or what the nurse says. People should ask, how does this fit into my context? That's what happened. So, as I say, we had some own goals. But there it is.
Is your video available?
Yes. Yes, it is. But I have to send it to you by Dropbox because it runs in other countries, but not in this one, because there's some copyright issue. I don't understand, but it gets blocked at the border. So if you would like, I could circulate a sheet, and perhaps you could write your email address, and I'll send you the Dropbox version. It actually goes on longer than you saw. It has it has a segment where the children thank the people, and then you see the dozens of people who helped.
Yes. So we are unfortunately out of time. A round of applause for the lovely panel. Thank you all very much.